Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's patron-exclusive review of Love Exposure. A patron-exclusive review chosen by Chris Bravo. Hosted by Jacob, Arnie, and Stuart. This podcast is spoiler-filled and contains harsh language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today we're discussing Love Exposure, starring Takahiro Nishijima, Hikari Mitsushima, Sakura Ando, directed by Shion Sono. This is the Now Playing co-host who's not quite as cool as Jesus or Kurt Cobain, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob, and let's commit lots of sins.
Is it that day already?
That's every day.
No, it's a Valentine's Day movie, folks. I figured February donors, they're wanting something romantic.
Yeah, it's got love in the title.
We don't always do rom-coms, but I thought this one might work. Actually, I didn't pick this.
No, this was picked by Chris Bravo, and I don't think he intended it to be a Valentine's Day pick, but he pledged for us to review this because he'd been going down a rabbit hole of Japanese cinema. We could have talked Kurosawa. We could have talked Kobayashi. We could have talked more Miki. But the director whose work stood out most to him was Shion Sono. And he thinks his works are batshit insanity with excessive gore, nudity, sex, bizarre plots. And, quote, he's super prolific, so there's something for everyone there. While I'd love for you to do an entire retrospective on his work, if I had to choose just one, we might as well make it his magnum opus, Love Exposure.
Yeah, he's like Miike. He's got hundreds of films.
No one's like Miike. He's worked for about 2 decades, pretty solidly, but he's still got about 80 films to catch up with Takashi Miike.
Okay, not quite that prolific.
But good news for Chris, I have included one of Shion Sono's movies in the book, Suicide Circle. I was holding them both in my hand. I was like, which one would go down better with listeners? I decided J-horror was probably a little more palatable than a 4-hour movie about panty pictures.
Yeah, and because you picked that for the book, I watched it as well to do a mini review. I've also seen his most recent film. He actually did an English language one with Nick Cage, Prisoners of the Ghostland, last year. It's pretty incomprehensible.
Yeah, I hated that one. I thought it was extremely terrible and disappointing. But what a combo, right? Nick Cage and this guy. Like, you knew it was going to be crazy. And it was.
Nick Cage does get a testicle blown off in it.
Yeah, that was the highlight of the movie, really.
So just to put a fine point on this then, you've seen Love Exposure before.
Yeah, theatrically even. You know, RIP to Cine Family. They were film programmers in LA that put together some of my very favorite screenings. Memories I'll always treasure. The Garbage Pail Kids movie retrospective thing that they did. They showed the Vincent Price movie, The Tingler. Wiring up the seats so you would get shocked in the butt at certain points. And yeah, they just knew how to have a good time at the movies. Sadly, like many of people I admire in the movies, they were undone by accusations of sexual impropriety. But yes, they, I think, were the only people in America to give a full week screening to Love Exposure about 4 years after it came out in Japan. It was all the hype in LA, and I struggled to find the time to see it. I think they ran it 7 times, maybe twice a day. But yeah, I did get to see it. They did it at this place called the Silent Movie Theater, which, by the way, they never showed silent movies. But it was kind of like a clubhouse. You probably could get only 50 people in there. So it was pretty intimate. And usually it was a pretty famous crowd, too. Michael Cera was always there. And it just had the feel of people that really wanted to go to extremes, and I definitely remember the audience eating it up. This was a very good night indeed.
Did you have to submit an upskirt photo to get in?
They did do stuff. They took an intermission, and they did have the Church O shirts, and again, they always knew how to party and cosplay, and again, they were brought down by sexual impropriety, so maybe there was panty skirt picture-taking, but not in the theater. I didn't see any evidence of that, but it was a crazy fun time. And how can you not laugh? I mean, this movie, it's definitely going to get a rise out of you. If nothing else, it aims to shock, and it's hard to imagine everyone not being a little bit shocked by a moment or two, no matter how jaded you are.
And I'd never heard of this film. It's probably not too surprising. I stick primarily to American cinema. I'm not opposed to seeing international cinema, but I'd not heard of this director and not heard of this movie. And when he told me he was picking a 4-hour movie about panty pics, I was like, okay, well.
Did you ask if it was a porno that he was making us watch?
That was your comment to me off air, Arnie, was that you had, like, Googled and gotten some photos and were very concerned that we were moving into X-rated territory. I was like, no, it's fine.
Yeah, I was surprised I hadn't heard of this one because I do watch a lot of Japanese cinema and especially the outrageous stuff. And like this one, it just totally missed my radar somehow.
Yeah, when I was looking at screenshots online, I saw a whole bunch of nude pictures that were not in the movie I saw.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that could happen. But yeah, I do wonder what the reputation of this movie is. I do know, again, a lot of hype that it finally came to America and the audience was very, very game, but it was a small audience. I mean, this movie is the very definition of a cult film, right? Literally, it's about a cult and probably only a segment of the population is really going to groove to it. But those that do are going to eat it all up. And I was one of them. So I was anxious to come back. I was excited it got picked. But then I was surprised to find out that although this movie is 4 hours long, that's the shortcut. This ran on Japanese TV, and there is 2 more hours of it if you were lucky enough to see that version.
I'm going to correct you because I guess I was lucky enough to see that version. I watched both the theatrical and the TV version. The TV version, it's 10 half-hour episodes. That comes to 5 hours. And when you remove all the credits, you only get about 30 minutes of extra footage.
Oh.
The rumor is the original cut was 6 hours. A lot of that footage is supposedly not even viable anymore to put back into the film because of the quality of it. But I had to go and start doing side-by-side comparisons because it was like, here's an extra shot, reverse shot of two people talking that they cut out, just to cut out 3 seconds here and 3 seconds there.
Oh, no.
Yes. Oddly enough, though, the TV version, you would think this would be a really seedy film, like when we talk about it at a high level. There's no nudity in it, except the TV version. There is a nude scene in it, which was weird. But that's the only thing that really stuck out as a big difference. If you're hoping to get more of this story, that if you feel like their characterization for someone and there's not enough of it in the 4-hour version, you're not going to get it in that TV version.
Yeah, there's two characters who drop out of the movie for like an hour of it that I figured had to be done justice in the TV version, but no.
Nope, they maybe have a couple extra scenes, but unnoticeable. I had to do side-by-side comparisons for a few episodes just to see what the differences were.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't imagine that there's any version of this movie that makes sense in totality, but I did imagine, as Arnie suggested, that some of the characters that kind of get lost, a lot of them get lost, frankly, in the second half of the movie, there does feel like things got cut out. Is there no new scenes, no new footage that you can name?
There is, again, one scene with Kaoki Aya's backstory where, again, trying to get into her sense of nihilism and she's participating in a porno scene with some people. That's the extent of the extra footage that stuck out.
Okay. So here's my other question before we get jumping into this big thing and try to get our hands around it. How based on a true story could it possibly be? What do we know about the origin of this movie that is fictional that was written by this director?
I read from Sono, or I watched an interview with him. He said it's about 10%. He knew someone that took upskirt photos, and I believe his sister or someone close to him was in a cult.
So two separate events that he mashed together.
Yeah, he kind of took those and then created a whole new story with them.
Once again, don't believe the based on true story disclaimers at the starts of films.
They're never true. But yeah, let's find out what this story is. Arnie, give him the plot summary. Let's jump into Love Exposure.
After Yu Honda's mother died, his father Tetsu became a priest. Not a very good priest, however, as Tetsu can't resist the advances of a woman named Kaori, and the two have a secret affair. Kaori is a bit of a drama queen, as shown by her seduction of a priest, and so, of course, she leaves Tetsu. After that, Tetsu becomes hardened, forcing Yu to do the sacrament of confession daily. Yu is a good boy who has nothing to confess, and his father sees through his lies. So to sin more and appease his abusive dad, Yu joins a street gang. In the gang, Yu becomes a master of taking upskirt photos. This sin is so bad, however, Yu's father beats him and bans him from the church. After losing a bet with his friends, Yu must go into the city dressed as a woman and kiss a girl. In the city, Yu encounters Yoko, a woman being accosted by a group of men. Together, Yoko and Yu fight them off, and Yu kisses Yoko. Yu takes the moniker Miss Scorpion, leaving Yoko believing she's a lesbian in love with this mysterious Miss Scorpion. But Yu is in love with Yoko, and he keeps up the Miss Scorpion deception by phone. But things grow more complicated when Kiori comes back into the picture. She wants Tetsu to leave the church and marry her. More, Yoko was the daughter of one of Kiori's other lovers, and now Kiori has taken Yoko as a surrogate daughter. This relationship of the parents caused Yoko and Yu to live in the same house, though Yoko finds Yu quite repulsive, while Yu pines for Yoko. Watching all this go down is a woman named Aya Koiki, a senior member of a scam, for-profit cult called the Zero Church. Aya wants to convert Tetsu to the Zero Church and bring all his flock from the Catholic Church. To do this, Aya has spied on the entire family and knows all of Yu's secrets. Aya infiltrates the family by telling Yoko that she, Aya, is Miss Scorpion. The two girls start a love affair, and Aya also starts to win over Tetsu and Kiori. This forces Yu to reveal his Miss Scorpion deception to Yoko, who rejects him fully. Then Yu is expelled from school when Aya floods his class with Yu's upskirt photo collection. Yu runs away from home, and Aya succeeds in bringing Tetsu, Kaori, and Yoko into the Zero Church. Yu tries to rescue Yoko from the cult by kidnapping her and trying to deprogram her, and days of this pass, but Yoko resists, and finally the Zero Church recovers her. Under duress, Yu is forced to join the Zero Church. He uses his access to the church to plant a bomb, killing the church leader and many of his acolytes. Aya, seeing the scam church go down, commits harikari. This causes Yu to have a mental break and believe he really is Miss Scorpion. He's put in a mental hospital. Yoko comes to Yu and finally reciprocates Yu's love, but Yu can't remember the girl. Yoko leaves the hospital devastated, but then Yu regains his memory. He races after Yoko, and the two hold hands, united finally, as credits roll.
And as we start here, I think it's a really big shock for anyone that does watch Japanese cinema that this is a story about Christian faith. Less than 2% of the population is Christian, not to mention Catholic at that. So for lots of reasons, this is not going to be a common story of Japanese people.
Yeah, I had to look that up. It's mostly Shinto and Buddhist. I had read, it was 1% of Christianity, which kind of goes with my thought. When I saw Christianity in Japan, I'll admit I've never really thought about what faith they follow, but I didn't think that it was Catholicism.
Yeah, I was not expecting a story about Catholics when I turned this on, and right from the beginning, it's a mom praying to the Virgin Mary.
So I'm guessing Sean is a Scorsese fan. There's just so much about Scorsese's work that is drenched in Catholic guilt. Hoodlums and bad behavior, young men doing bad things, and how their Catholic guilt influences that. It feels like a homage in some degree.
To me, this felt like an indictment of religion and focusing on outsider ones that maybe come to Japan through Western means, and I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of themes to explore here, but it's interesting that he did go with that Catholic angle.
What I find interesting is they don't really bring any other religion into it. There's Christianity, and specifically worship of the Virgin Mary, and they talk about the Vatican, so I view that as Catholicism, but my subtitle translation said Christianity. And then there's this cult that I talked about in the plot summary, but at no point do they actually seem to go into a discussion of religion where I would find this an indictment of any specific religion where other religions, native religions, would be considered better or anything.
No, you're right. They don't make that argument that, hey, it's because of Catholicism or Christianity that we have this guilt complex. If we were just Shinto or Buddhist, we wouldn't have that. You're right. But man, so much of this is like, look, you're going to end up doing upskirts out of Catholic guilt.
It's not a comparative. It doesn't feel to me like a Japanese person commenting on a religion that isn't their own, but lots of people can find ways to criticize any type of organized religion. And yes, this movie certainly is a damnation of at least a certain way of practicing Catholicism.
Yeah, I feel Scorsese, when he talks about Catholicism, like, that is something personal to him. And this feels like an outsider talking about, hey, what is my view as an outsider of this religion? I don't know. It feels like it's coming from a different place. Not that that's better or worse. It's just, it would be hard for me to say this is like Martin Scorsese doing a Japanese film. I've seen that film. It's called Silence.
Is Shion not Catholic? I don't see much written about him, frankly, so I don't know if he is identifying with our main character, but I assumed that that's what he would do.
He was actually, I said it was one of his family members, it's actually him that was in that cult, where he says this is partly based on a true story, so I don't know what kind of cult that was, maybe there was some Christianity in it.
You know, when I think about Japanese cults, what comes to my mind is the 1995 sarin gas attack in Tokyo, if you remember. Who were they? They weren't Moonies, but there was some offset Christian group that basically released a lethal gas in the Tokyo subway system, and it made the news for years. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, the suicide cult, essentially. It was at a time when that was kind of big, too. We had our own here, too, but it made me think Christians, cults, and all of that. I was tapped in early into thinking that, yes, these are going to be some dangerous folks, but at its onset, I think it's defined very much as a young sexless boy making a promise to his virginal mother that he's going to marry her one day, that she loves the Virgin Mary so much, and because she is sick with something, you know, she's not going to live much longer, she makes this boy promise to honor her by marrying someone just like this statue.
This is a 4-hour movie. And yet I'm surprised how many portions of the story are clearly rushed through. Like this beginning with the mother's death and everything. You could have spent a half an hour here getting to know the mother and how the mother's faith influenced everything.
I mean, if you want an extra scene of these three in the grocery store while Yu sings Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, that's in that TV version. You get that extra 10 seconds.
Yeah, there's several grocery store scenes with that Fa, Re, Mi. I don't understand why those shots are in there or why he's singing the scale.
The Sound of Music. That was about a nun.
Yeah, it is a struggle of faith, that story as well. And yeah, I suppose that is the only way in which Love Exposure is like The Sound of Music.
But the opening to Guardians of the Galaxy or the opening of Up, this is not. I did not find myself weeping for the dying mother or the husband who was left without a wife. It's just pretty perfunctory. We're setting up the story. The story started. My mom died. My dad apparently doesn't believe in dating again because he's going straight to the Catholic Church and becoming a priest.
Yeah, it influences them both in a dramatic way. This boy is not going to be able to find a partner, and the dad isn't going to either.
Yeah, he can't find a partner because he's going to become a priest. They're not supposed to date or get married. But then, essentially, I thought it was like Marla from Fight Club shows up at this church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about Fight Club a lot during this movie. Kaori's not Marla for me. I think it comes later when we see the character that's really turning the screws that's involved with Zero Church. But yes, you could make the case. What is Kaori? She's a...
mentally unstable?
Yes.
Loose woman? Is she a prostitute? I think we'll find out that she's gone with many men and for whatever reason in this moment has recanted her life of sin and is moved. I don't know. Is she moved by this man's words and wants to join Christianity, or is she always putting herself towards unavailable men? It's hard to know.
I just think she's totally toxic to every man she's with. Is she a prostitute? I never got that. She was dressed like she'd come from the clubs and gone straight to church, but the way we see her with other guys makes me think she's just out for a good time, and yeah, these are the kind of girls I've always tried to avoid because they bring so much drama into the relationship. You could tell she's trouble from a mile away going after this priest.
Yeah, she's out for a good time, yet she gets upset with the father because he's a priest and they have to have a relationship in secret and she wants to get married. But I agree, she is toxic. Like, you run from this woman. But yeah, she does, at least with her words, say she wants to be with this man forever.
And the camera lets you know that Tetsu is more or less thinking it too. He comes on strong about read the Bible, do what you're supposed to, But he ogles her breasts. He definitely, in giving communion and confession, is having sinful thoughts. It's pretty clear with the way that the camera takes in what he's seeing that she is a temptress, that he is being tempted by this.
And while all this is happening, the main piece of music that's going to go through this entire movie starts playing, Beethoven's Seventh. I find that very weird dating music. It's kind of dirgish.
It made me think instantly of Clockwork Orange and the weird circular story that that takes about a young punk. Probably is even a reference.
Yeah, the way that music builds up as it's going and we're getting this countdown, like we're counting down to some miracle and that Beethoven's always playing. Like there is something about this that's like pulling me in. You're saying that opening's no up with the mom dying, but I'm getting drawn in, especially once Kaori leaves and we see how the father responds with his son, Yu.
Again, a lot of story very quickly. We're like 15 minutes into a 4-hour movie and Kaori's already come and gone. And that 15 minutes happened so fast that I have no time to get an opinion of this movie. But right after that, it starts to get its footing. And I agree, I start to really realize I had no idea what I was watching. I didn't watch a trailer. I'd read Chris's email and that was the extent of it. And then I'm realizing, oh, this is a comedy.
Yes, sometimes, many times. Genreless, I would actually argue. In the end, it would be difficult because this thing moves so much like liquid. It goes from all different areas. But yes, you definitely should be amused by Kaori. But I'm going to argue she also has a point. I always think about the musical artist Prince. His idea of worshiping God was having a three-way, you know, like for some people.
Hallelujah!
Yeah, erotic expression is something that it's a gift from God that should be celebrated as such. So the fact that this woman wants to do it in the confessional booth and then wants this priest to honor her with marriage, she wants to be validated. I understand her point, even though it's illogical. And I do think that this movie is about the illogical marriage of carnal desire and spiritual desire.
Yeah, I guess illogical is the best way to put it, because again, if your idea of your eternal love is a Catholic priest who can't get married, there's something wrong with you. Like, that's not a target you go after for your love life.
And yet, maybe if you look at Catholicism and the things that it pushes forward, loving Jesus, loving the Virgin Mary, this is kind of what they're pushing. I think that's Sono's point. It doesn't feel like an outsider take on it at all. To me, it feels like I've thought about this a lot. And while there might be things about this religion that feels pure, in the end, it's incestuous. What they want me to love is my mother.
I grew up in a religious household, and there is always that joke, like in Christianity, especially traditional Christianity, no homo, but you're supposed to love Jesus. So there's always that weird, like, I'm supposed to love this dude, but you're saying that's bad. So yeah, there is that inherent conflict in a lot of organized religion.
Having gone to Catholic school and been raised in a Catholic family while not practicing Catholicism myself, I didn't see that love of Jesus in those exact terms. It was more like love him like loving a father, not loving like loving a lover. I didn't see the Virgin Mary as a idol of desire. I see it in this movie, but I never saw that in the religion itself in life.
No, but of course, but you're supposed to emulate them, right? And as such, then the perfect woman, the woman you marry, the Madonna whore complex is that, yeah, you go with the whore, but then you marry the virgin. Like, that's definitely a part of our culture. It's not just rooted in Catholicism, but I definitely feel like a lot of fundamentalist teachings, this is the schism of, like, what we expect out of people and what they're looking for in each other.
But the character I really tie to is Yu, who is witnessing all of this and narrating all of this. There's a lot of voiceover over a lot of this film, and he's doing all the talking, telling us what happens. We're just seeing anecdotes. We're not being told the story through the actions of those characters, Tetsu and Kaori. And after Kaori leaves is when Tetsu gets really hard and starts forcing Yu into this abusive confessional situations where Yu is actually too good of a person. He has no sins, no lustful thoughts. You know, that's the one you could always go is Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I have had lustful thoughts every day, all day. You know, you can go with that one. But he doesn't even step on ants. He helps old ladies across the street.
But I do think Yu is innocent when it comes to sex. Like, his whole thing is no woman has ever given him an erection. That is what he's looking for. That's how he'll know he has found his Virgin Mary, when he can finally get turned on by someone.
His penis is a divining rod. It will point him in the way.
Yeah, which sounds like he's already been shaped painfully by what his mother made him promise at a pre-sexual age. That was damaging for her to make him make that vow. And him trying to honor a dead mother in this way is just part of the perversions that were going to be on display for the next 3.5 hours.
Him trying to be bad is hysterical, though. Oh, I'm going to kick the soccer ball away from the little kids. I'm going to step on ants. I'm now having a good time chuckling at this movie, even though I'm watching this teenager be abused by his father. The way it's being depicted is also funny.
This is where the humor, I think, really turns up, when he's stepping on those ants. And then, yeah, he joins these three other kids, like in some gang, beating up a vending machine, and decides he has to really step up his sins. He really needs to become a pervert. And thanks to this movie, I now know what hentai means. It means pervert. Doesn't mean tentacle porn. It just means pervert.
That's what I thought. I thought I heard them say hentai.
Yeah, they kept saying hentai.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't get enough of these friends. I think he has three of them because they're looking for a trinity. Unfortunately, I think you're right, Arnie. This could be, God, it could be a TV series. Like, we could spend long periods of time watching this all unfold. I particularly like Tag, the shoplifter who refuses to cut the sales tags off of his hats and shirts.
He's the only one who's distinguishable, though, because of that. You know, the other two don't really seem to have distinguishing characteristics, but Tag, with his big smile and his mini pearl fashion sense.
This is where it goes from comedy to weird, perverted, live-action anime as they meet Master Lloyd, who's going to teach them tusatsu, the art of upskirts using karate and kung fu moves.
Oh, this has to be comedy, too. Kung fu upskirt photos? I mean, I'm using that rope weapon like Scorpion has from Mortal Kombat, but I'm putting a camera on the end and getting it between women's legs.
The yo-yo cam is amazing. Yeah, I did laugh a lot. This is where you're really permitted to laugh much louder. I think the first 40 minutes is just curious. And then when you reach this point, it is grand permission to just really enjoy how absurd Yu's idea of pleasing his father is. Keep in mind, what has led him here is the fact that his father has run back to the priesthood, abandoned him, and basically he can't confess a sin that his father will rebuke him for. He wants his father to beat on him. There is a masochism to this devotion. And I do think that's another major theme of this movie, is that pain validates, that true believers want to be hurt by their father.
Yeah, and as he starts training with Master Lloyd, I thought this character was going to be in a whole lot more of it. He's kind of here to teach him how to do it and goes away. But like I said, it's weird that I'm saying, like, taking voyeuristic photos against someone's will is fun and funny, but this film does that. Like, you hear this is a film about upskirts, and like, I don't know if I want to watch it. But it's not as lewd as you would think it would be.
It's kind of lewd. I guess what I would say is you would come in prepared to hate the person that was committing such an act, and it's actually made charming, which actually may mean that this is even more insidious, that they can take something vile and make us think that it's cute.
I guess it doesn't feel sexual. It has a different vibe about it. Maybe it's because you can't get an erection, but as soon as he gets that upskirt photo that gives him one, then it will be sexual, but it doesn't have that pornographic sexuality type of feeling to it.
He's not doing this to get his rocks off. If we believed that he was a sexual being in doing it, I agree. It would invite our contempt. But because he's trying to please his mother and his father, it's hard to be mad at him.
And the movie handles this interestingly. It doesn't shy away from showing us these photos, which are all mostly very clear photos that are no motion blur or anything, despite how they're getting them, while doing backflips and everything. But the movie is also going to, throughout the whole runtime, show a lot of panties. These women are in short skirts, and when they bend over, when they are posed in certain ways, this movie, throughout the whole thing, is going to make us, the voyeur, I feel, in constantly revealing its characters' panties.
And I've never been to Japan, but I know this is the stereotype. The upskirt photos, the schoolgirl uniforms, the skirts. I don't know if he's making commentary on their culture or what maybe the West thinks of their culture, because it feels like he's commenting on the West through religion. I'm not sure what to make of it, but it does feel stereotypical, but maybe that's a thing there. I mean, they have the whole name, the tosatsu, this whole voyeuristic type of pika panty pornography.
Is that a real word? Like, I'd never heard of that word before. Tosatsu? Is that, if I went to a Tokyo porn store and said that word, would they direct me to a very large shelf of panty books? I don't know.
All I know, like, supposedly they have vending machines where you could buy used panties. I've heard that.
Here we just have OnlyFans.
But yeah, there's something kind of sweet about it, even though that this may sound like, you know, usually this kind of gets you canceled in this kind of culture. We do not want people, we're not promoting this kind of behavior, but because the director is skillfully twisted this into a way of honoring religion and your parents, it makes him seem innocent. It makes me stay rooted with you, even though I shouldn't. And of course, we have other characters who are going to be even more enterprising and maybe vile in the background.
Maybe, but I never find myself hating these characters. And that is a tricky tightrope to walk. And yeah, I think Sono does that very well.
You don't hate the ones committing these acts, but what about Kyoki Aya, who is, at this point in the movie, we don't understand why, but she and her girl gang are sort of watching from afar. The Yu character takes a snap of them in the rain, and they threaten to take him to the police, but then she's like, no, I'm going to keep my eye on you, Christian. You know, once she finds out that he's a Christian doing all of this, she takes a different tack and starts spying on him and is riding around in a van with a parakeet for long sequences, making us really curious as to what's going on with her.
Is that parakeet symbolic of something?
Something.
Oh, definitely. When we get to her backstory, it very much is. But this is 65 days from the miracle. This first chapter, I don't know how else to define the first hour or so, is a countdown to something we're told is going to be, you know, I'm thinking a religious miracle. Is Jesus going to come back? What is going to happen that's going to be so amazing? You's going to get a boner. That's really what we're talking about here.
Well, I kind of figured that at first it's like 365 days of the miracle. And yes, I'm thinking like God's going to come down and show himself. But as it goes on and he's talking about like none of these photos are giving him a boner, I'm like, oh, the boner is going to be the miracle. He's going to finally see that Maria.
Yeah, he's enlisted his friends. At first, his friends were kind of standoffish, but now they're calling him captain and they're competing for his favor. They're trying to learn his skills. They're going, quote unquote, downtown. That's, I think, suggestiveness intended, to go find professional women walking around and practice their skills. And then in the course of this one-upsmanship, I think it's Takahiro that actually says, if my photo's better than yours, you're going to have to dress up in drag and go kiss a girl downtown. And it is.
That photo that wins is quite interesting. I wish we'd gotten a chance to see it taken, because the girl who's being photographed has hearts on her panties, but is also looking right at the camera, is like knowing that that shot is being taken, making me wonder what happened in the following seconds.
Yeah, which I think is why he won, because she's like looking, she's acknowledging what's going on or something. That's what they seem amazed by.
I think it was on an escalator. I think he had that advantage.
Yeah.
But the point is that Yu has to do what should be a shameful, humiliating thing, but is actually going to allow him to have the relationship he's been wanting this whole time. Because keep in mind, he hasn't enjoyed sexually any of this work. It's almost what I would describe as sexually compulsive. He's just more, just taking photos. I think he says thousands of girls. None of them are exciting. But now, yes, he has met a character that we've seen in the background. We haven't got a name for her yet. She'll be better explained in chapter 2. But this is his Virgin Mary. This is, I guess, a kind of spiritually touched girl. She is a virgin, right? I think we do know that much.
Yeah, I believe she is. And she's a Christian. When we get into her backstory, we'll see that she does convert. Kurt Cobain isn't the only cool guy. Jesus is too.
Right. And she has some magical power, like she can look at a news report of a school shooting and project herself there and like deflate the situation. Like, she seems to be able to dodge bullets and make angry people recognize that she is divine.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be explained better. She has this whole monologue how there's always bullets flying everywhere, but she could see them, so she could dodge them. And then that just goes away. Like, it doesn't come back in the climax. It doesn't come back when people are fighting. It's a weird stylistic thing that is here. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool because this is feeling like a crazy live anime at this point. But it just goes away after we meet her.
Yeah, I don't understand why we have that scene. I was hoping there'd be more to explain this in that longer television cut, because here, I was very confused by this scene. I'm like, was she in that room? Was she shot? Is this a dying thought? I had no idea what was going on with that, and it never comes back. If she could dodge a bullet, she would have avoided a lot of trouble in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. You want to, I mean, it's such a great idea. If the idea is that she literally is a vessel of God and thus can't be killed, the fact that she can see invisible bullets coming for the other characters, well, whenever someone's about to die, we want to see her seeing those bullets. You're absolutely right that they have set up something great for a climax that never comes. But there's a lot about confusion at this point. I mean, I think it is a technique of the director in a Pulp Fiction way. He's jumping around in time, having characters that are hanging out in the background, and we'll later learn why in 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah, you talk about Pulp Fiction when we get Kaoki's backstory and their literal, like, Kill Bill blood spatter from cut off penis. Yeah, it's crazy.
We should say that the miracle is the erection that happens when he not only sees this virginal Yoko take down a whole bunch of guys for reasons that will become explained in about 20 minutes. but yes, Kyoki Aya is also there, and she is going to explain why she is so fascinated by you at this point as well. This is who I would call Marla from Fight Club. She is the one that is involved in everything bad. She's selling cocaine. She's selling fake religious artifacts. She's funding a cult.
The reason I would not call her the Marla is because Marla never affects change in that movie. She's always acted upon. She doesn't do a lot of acting. And here, this is the person who's going to really drive forward the plot for much of the rest of the movie. She is an agent of chaos, however, and we're told, yeah, she does all these dealings, and it all started when she cut the throat of one of her classmates. And apparently that only gets you a couple of years in Japan if you're a teenager.
No, I think it started earlier than that. Again, we're not concerned about chronology. We jump around into shock after shock. But eventually what I see is that she was put on the path by her good Christian father. He was a prominent man in the church. Everyone gave him a lot of esteem. And when he would go home, he would take out whips and beat his daughter just for having a body that made him think sexual thoughts. So we've had a lot of characters that have been masochists. Now we're also seeing that religion breeds sadists as well.
Yeah, that is something, again, with Christianity, you're supposed to go out and multiply and replenish the earth. That's what Adam and Eve were told to do. We're supposed to follow that. But you're also supposed to hate sex and find all that kind of stuff dirty and not want to do it until, I guess, you get married, then it's okay. You see all that kind of conflict with this abusive relationship that she is brought up in.
It's the very definition of blame the victim. She is like an 8-year-old girl being beat for being an 8-year-old girl because grown men find that sexy, or at least he does. And this is where he stomps on her birdcage and kills her parakeet. So from this point forward, she's going to keep a parakeet with her after she gets her revenge.
Okay, that's right. There was the dead bird.
Yeah, there's a lot to remember in 4 hours.
Yes, there is. And I saw this movie in 1 4-hour sitting. So yeah, I forgot there was one dead bird and she keeps a bunch more around.
Yeah, but basically she starts by hurting herself. It should be said she gets a straight razor and is cutting her arms and is, again, trying to validate through pain, the major theme of this movie. And then she realizes, you know what? It's better to shove that razor blade into a flirtatious classmate's neck. And it's better to go home and cut off my oppressor's penis.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about people motivated through love. There's a whole monologue scene about love. But it should be noted, and I don't know if you've seen the other parts of this trilogy, but this is the first part of the Hate Trilogy, I guess it's called.
No way!
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and so I feel like this is the person that embodies that hate. Like, everyone else, they're kind of trying to act out of this love for God, but this person, yeah, hate for herself, she'll have sex, and then take that razor to that guy for those guilty feelings.
Wait, are you saying that there's two other movies that are sequels to this?
I think they're thematic sequels.
Right, yeah, right. I get that it's not going to have the same characters, but, oh, I've got to get on that.
And when she's cutting herself, you know, I know a lot of teenagers, especially teenage girls, do cutting. I don't know how many do it with the box cutters that cause the gushing flow of ejaculating blood everywhere.
I guess you didn't watch Suicide Club for the book. I think Marjorie was on that one with Stuart and myself, but yeah, that's his thing.
That's kind of Japanese gore cinema all over. It's kind of a culture that promotes it. I mean, there's something about Japanese culture and then the way that it plays with repression and shocking violence and shocking sexuality. So I think, yeah, it's a release, right? If you go from being repressed to this kind of extreme, that's kind of why I'm drawn to Japanese cinema. I think that it can really go to extremes in surprising, sometimes delightful, sometimes just horrifying ways.
Yeah, Artie, I believe you did watch Tokyo Gore Police for the book.
Yep, I did.
That was done by Sono's special effects guy, who was working on this one as well. So, yes, that's very much their aesthetic.
But the scene after she comes back from reformatory school, finds her father having had a stroke, laying there catatonic with an erection.
Which is common, apparently. I mean, that does happen. My mom came in during this scene and was like, oh yeah, that they definitely, you get a hard on during these kinds of seizures and strokes.
What a scene to come in on.
Yeah. I said, literally don't look. And she's like, of course.
It's pixelated. It's Japanese.
Yeah, she's going for it.
Yeah, your mom's a nurse. She would know.
Yeah, she is.
Versus just thinking your mom's really into disabled people's hard-ons. But then she decides to go all Lorena Bobbitt with the kitchen scissors, and ooh, is this painful to watch. And man, talk about the blood. I mean, oh my God, so much blood spurts from there, and I am wincing. I literally had to look like through squinted eyes and eyelashes at that scene.
Again, it helped that it was blurred out, the member. If you could actually see that thing, it'd be much harder to watch.
It is the hardest scene in the movie, I do think.
Out of a movie with many hard scenes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's not going to let you off light now that we're done with that. No, she's going to grow up to, like I said, fund a cult and basically enjoy the idea of torturing Christians. I think that why she becomes fascinated with you and becomes part of this love triangle is that she wants to do to you what she did to her father. She loves that idea. It's what she gets off in this religion.
And she's second in command of the Zero cult, right? That's kind of how I take it, because she's talking back to the leader when she's pitching this whole, we want to get this Catholic priest over here. And I'm trying to figure out, how does that make them money? Because they're all about begging on street corners for fake charities and all of this. And the thinking is, if you get the priest, you'll get his followers and you'll be able to increase the size of the cult. She's going to go through so many machinations for this that I don't believe helping the cult is her motivation, because it's a lot of work for that.
I don't even know if she gets the rest of the congregation.
No, no. If her father was a prominent Christian, she's out to destroy them as publicly and as painfully as she can. And that's why you is such a delicious target. The fact that he has a father that's a priest, first and foremost, pretty uncommon. And the way that he's trying to honor him. Yeah, she's definitely intrigued by the drama that's going on between you, Tetsu, and now Yoko is coming into the picture as well.
Yeah, it's all culminating in this big anime-style fight. Now, I gotta ask you, Yu's there, but he's in drag. He's under the guise of Miss Scorpion. This is a reference to the series of exploitation films, Japanese ones, Female Prisoner Scorpion. I don't know if you guys have seen these. I've seen the original four. They've been remade, but very hard, you know, capital E exploitation film, women in prison type exploitation. And this is the outfit that Scorpion wears when she gets out of prison.
Oh, I mean, I didn't know where it came from, and it didn't really seem to matter. You're Miss Scorpion. I mean, it just sounds like a drag queen name.
Yeah, this is totally a reference to Japanese exploitation.
I thought this movie was so going in a different direction when he dresses up as Miss Scorpion, because he's talking about how he should be embarrassed, but he's feeling very empowered, and he's walking the streets. I thought he was going to find his Mary was himself, and he was going to be dressing up like a woman for the rest of this movie, and that was going to be the sin. No, it's all about this meet cute with him and Yoko, where Yoko's getting attacked and he's going to hop in full drag to help her fight off this huge gang of random thugs.
And why are these thugs attacking her? Because she's been attacking them. When we get into her backstory, she is just as crazy and violent as any of these other characters. Forget her whole Virgin Mary rep. She's also got a damaged background. I think she is a virgin, but her father wants to sleep with her. And we have one brief scene in which they've been beating on each other. She got an alarm clock and they're all bloody and she's trying to get away from him. And he basically says, the reason why I have to go with so many other women is I have to sublimate my desire for incest. Like, I want to sleep with you. And the way that I deal with that is bringing home new mommies for you every night. Very twisted. And of course, she hates this man. She grows to hate all men. She turns to rock and roll punk rockers like Patti Smith and Chrissy Hines and all of the early 80s pre-Riot Girl kind of influence rock icons. And she basically goes out to the docks and beats up men at this point. Innocent boys walking along. Like, it doesn't matter who they are. She feels great when she hurts men.
But she loves Kurt Cobain. Wouldn't you think she'd go more Courtney Love?
No one likes Courtney Love.
I agree. You like Kurt Cobain. There was something very feminine about Kurt Cobain. You know, he wore drag and what have you. So I feel like he counts. He fits in with that wall of women that she's got pinned up.
And because her dad ends up dating Kaori, the woman who was dating the priest father at the beginning, it's Kaori's influence that makes her a Christian, like convinces her to get that Jesus tattoo as well, that cross on her arm. And she doesn't want a mom. She wants a friend. And Kaori makes that promise that she'll be a friend. So they go clubbing and cruising together.
Yeah, I guess the mom still keeps hooking up. And that's what I kind of love about her. I agree. You guys at first correctly identified her as a toxic nightmare and a character to find contemptible. But in this moment, in the flip reality of it, she's the perfect hero for this girl. And she's like, oh, you hate men? That's fine. Let's go shopping. Let's get tattoos. And she really teaches her how to channel all that rage into something more healthy. This is a woman that it doesn't occur to her that she can't have a promiscuous life that would honor God. Like, I don't know. Where is it in the Bible that you're not supposed to sleep around? I don't know where that morality comes in. I know you're not supposed to covet your neighbor's wife, but is there direct passage?
I mean, the Old Testament has a lot of rules. Jesus, not so many rules, but that Old Testament, a lot of rules about who you're allowed to sleep with and marry.
Yeah, she likes Jesus. She likes the New Testament. To her, it is not a conflict of interest to be a hoe and to be religious.
Or to try to re-seduce that priest. Yeah. The reason Yoko is even anywhere near you to begin with is because Kaori has come back for Tetsu again, and this time she's going to pull him away from that mistress god.
Yeah, they've cut to the scene a couple times. And at first, when she tackles him, you think that he's into it. And then you realize when we cut back in this moment, he's actually running to his car, trying to drive away. She'll, like, ram him and push him into the river.
I thought she was going to kill him.
Yeah, her scenes feel very predatory, whereas a lot of Yu's upskirt scenes do not, strangely. Like, she, I feel like, is almost raping that priest.
She uses those words. I don't know if that's a translation issue, but yes, she brags to Yoko that, oh, I beautifully raped him and now we're going to be a family. And that was one of the terms of the deal. Yoko is like, we're friends, but don't try to make your lovers into my father. I don't have fathers. I don't have families. I don't want to be in that. So she's already not liking the idea. She's being pulled into some kind of Brady Bunch. And then when she finds out that, yeah, she's going to be with this stalker kid, you, as her brother, real problems.
And she doesn't even know the worst of it. She doesn't know about the up panty shots. She doesn't know this guy's Miss Scorpion. She just finds him creepy because, I mean, I think she finds him creepy because he's male and she hates all men.
Right.
But beyond that, yes, he has been kind of staring at her in class in ways that aren't exactly inviting.
Yeah, he seems very lecherous towards her.
In that big fight scene, again, if he hadn't been dared to wear that outfit, she would have beaten him up too and never given him another thought. He may never have even recognized her as his Mary because she might have just socked him first and he wouldn't be able to see her or the wind as it blows up her skirt. But yes, now this is sort of like a Shakespearean comedy of men dressing as women, falling in love with women and what have you. And all of that antics, it feels very old-fashioned. All of a sudden, this really hipster graphic movie is feeling incredibly retro.
Yeah, for those who have only read Hamlet, Julius Caesar, and Romeo and Juliet, there's a lot of Shakespearean comedies of this exact thing. I didn't think Shakespeare, but you are so right to call that out, Stuart.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, you as Miss Scorpion gives Yoko his phone number, and so she's calling, and he has to run to take these calls and speak like a girl. Sometimes he's just one room over doing it. So yeah, a lot of that old kind of comedy there.
Yeah, some like it hot, Ladybugs. I don't know what your reference is. Mine is Shakespeare.
Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah.
Yes, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Just one of the guys.
Yes, there you go. It's been done throughout the ages. Comedy has been defined by gender swapping and people falling in love with the wrong image of their perfect ideal. And yeah, it's just kind of funny in the fight. She's trying to like push down her skirt because the wind's blowing up. He's trying to push down his first boner. And from that point on, yes, he can only capture her fancy when he puts on that hat and wig and black flowing outfit and pretend to be Miss Scorpion. When he's trying to be himself, she'll have none of it.
He plays it well, though, because he does tell Miss Scorpion, well, this creep is going to be your brother. Maybe he smile at everything. He knew he was going to be your brother. And so you need to be nice to him. I mean, normally I don't see that level of manipulation in these cross-dress comedy things where now you see Yoko forcing herself to be nice to you and then turning her face and just being so disgusted by how nice she's being.
And this is all really funny stuff, too, I want to point out. Like, I'm laughing as all this is going on.
I'm glad to hear that because we've been through a lot and we're only halfway through the movie. And if you were not enjoying this, I don't think there's much hope of it changing and getting better for you. It will have a different taste in its second half, but I don't think that there are going to be the kinds of improvements. I guess what I'm saying is turn it off. If you've gotten to this point and you don't like it, you're not going to.
Yeah, I would say this first half, this is the more outrageous stuff. When I'm watching those upskirt training segments with the kung fu moves and this fight and this comedy going on, like, it is one vibe, and I feel like the second half, that's going to shift. So if this first half isn't working for you, when it gets dramatic in the second half, it definitely will not.
Yeah, sometimes I think in some now playing reviews, especially of longer movies, if I mildly haven't enjoyed the movie, because it does feel like I'm in some kind of waterboarding session with the film, I end up with a scathing review of a movie I might only mildly dislike. And here, watching a four-hour foreign film that I knew nothing about, I was nervous going in, because if I did dislike that first hour, I was going to have three long hours following it. But like Jacob, I find myself laughing and really enjoying the overall vibe of what's going on here. Like you said, Stuart, this is going to be a very fluid movie with its emotions, and the comedy does sort of go away after a point. But for all of this, I'm like, this has really been enjoyable and kind of smart in the way that it is perverting perversion.
It's around this time that we took the intermission. You could sense that the audience needed it, but I remember everyone smiling. And that is not the experience when the movie's over. I definitely feel like the vibe will change after this point. For better or for worse, it decides to become something else. I would argue the dramatic ways that it turns, the spiritual ideas that it has, it's been working them in the first half, but they've been in the background. Those ideas come to the fore. The upsetting stuff happens more frequently. The comedy stuff happens far less often once we get to the last 90 minutes.
And that's really a downturn brought about by Kiyoki. When she decides she's watched long enough, and it has been also funny to cut to her listening to both sides of the phone conversations with Miss Scorpion, knowing Miss Scorpion is you, and just seeing her gleeful I think she's having the reaction we're having watching this kind of sitcom play out. And then she decides, all right, it's time for me to make my move. And she's going to join the class and say, I am Miss Scorpion. She's going to get some of those cult members to break down a wall, be like, where is Scorpion? We know Scorpion is here. And she's going to stand up, I'm Miss Scorpion, and fight them off in a prearranged, pre-choreographed fight.
I want the cell phones. I know Japanese always are ahead of the game with cell phones. Americans have not gotten the ones with the razor blades in them yet. I love that they punch the button and jink, out they come. I'm like, that is so cool.
iPhone 14, I guess.
Mate, we can hope, right?
iPhone 14, when you need to cut a bitch.
You're right. Just when we thought that this was settling into, I mean, it was still crazy, but it was settling into sort of an old-fashioned gender swapping crazy that felt familiar. And I'm like, oh, okay. So now we're just going to play with the fact that brother and sister might fall in love. All right. I can go with that. That actually sounded kind of normal. And then we have this crazy bitch who, yeah, wants to just hurt Christians so badly that she wants to really prevent you from having his Virgin Mary. The way to hurt you the most is to make her believe I'm the thing she loves. I'm going to put on that wig, that flowing black outfit. I'm going to kick the ass of these guys in front of her. And yeah, I mean, you see that Yoko is a little confused at first. She's like, you look different, but she more or less goes with it. Her desire is such that she really has accepted that she's a lesbian. And okay, you're a pretty classmate girl, be my tutor, and we can bite each other's tongues.
Is Yoko a lesbian? Because, like, I'm going to have problems with the end of this. It's confusing. Or is she just being manipulated at this point? She doesn't know who she is.
In both cases, you could also make the argument that you might be homosexual. If women don't give him erections and everything is really about pleasing his mother, you could say in both cases, these characters' sexuality is so suppressed by their religious devotion that what they love spiritually is so hampering their ability to have carnal love that it's very damaging. Yeah, I don't know how to define them. I wouldn't begin to guess, but it feels wrong to call them gay and lesbian.
Whatever her sexuality is, it feels like here at the beginning, or at the 2-hour mark, which is still kind of early on in this film, that's 4 hours, but like it is molded by her abusive dad, and you can see how that transferred into a hate for men, but maybe she doesn't hate all men, it was just her father she hated.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I kind of wondered, it's hard for me to verbalize, but I felt bad for Yoko because it's like she thinks she fell in love with a woman who was a guy, and now she, I presume, is performing sexual acts with a woman who she believes is Miss Scorpion. I mean, I guess you don't define a sexuality by an act. It's more than that. But I felt like this could really fuck her up for life.
Yeah, if she wasn't already, I agree. All these people are going to need some serious counseling when this movie's over.
And the audience as well, maybe.
But yes, this is a new wrinkle that really, again, I think this is the character you can hate. Maybe you're right. Maybe we have conflicted feelings about much of the cast. But I think Kyoki Aya, we liked her at first because she mirrored her own reactions. But now that her plan is coming into play and we realize that all of this, under the pretense of trying to get members for Zero Church, she's really trying to destroy the lives of these characters we all are rooting for. Yeah, I pretty much hate her.
Yeah, like I said, in the TV cut, there's that extra scene early on with her backstory where she pushes this woman into filming a pornographic scene with her and another man to increase this woman's like loneliness and despair. Like, she really is not a great person.
Yeah, I wouldn't need another scene to hate her. Like, I'm already there. I got it. She's awful. I think her most contemptible thing is, in lots of ways, she was pushing you to basically come out. And he eventually will bait Yoko to come back to the park. He's dressed in the outfit, and he'll rip off Miss Scorpion and say, you're in love with me, and it doesn't go well.
The big mistake I see you make is that when Aya came into his room, he then is like, I don't want to deal with you, and he leaves. Never leave an enemy alone in your room to find all the incriminating evidence right under the bed. That was his fatal flaw.
Yeah, but he did punch her out first. I mean, he knocked her cold.
Which she seemed to like.
Yes, of course she did.
She seems to enjoy that abuse. But Kyoki, you could say she's a bad character, but is she doing anything different than Christianity does? She's making people be truthful. That is her thing. We'll see that with the father later on when he joins the cult. He has to tell this harsh truth, and she's doing that to you at this point. He's got to be truthful that he deceived Yoko with this Miss Scorpion outfit.
Yeah, she's actually in her own weird way keeping these people honest and true to their faith. And yeah, when you think of it that way, it's hard to see religion as a comfort or something to be in love with. But then she really goes the extra step and takes all of that incriminating evidence and passes it around the school. Yu now is outed as king of perverts, and everyone knows what he's been doing with those cameras. Does he get expelled for that, or because one of the kids that's poking fun at him, he beats up?
I thought it was for the photos.
I thought the photos.
But this is where I feel like something got lost. This movie doesn't need to be longer, per se, but like, he goes from running home, and his family is, you know, his dad is slapping him again, which again, he likes, because that means you pay attention to me, you validate me, and he runs away back to his friends that we've forgotten about, and then all of a sudden, the family is missing, and so is Ariel, right? Like, there needed to be some explanation why all of a sudden he's clean cut and coming back, and they're not at church. Not at home, and no one at school knows anything either.
Yeah, they've all disappeared, assumingly having been recruited in that cult by Aya. And then there's this whole thing, oh, you want to know where Yoko is? You got to go work for a pornographer. Like, this is where I went back and compared the TV and the movie. I'm like, there's got to be, but no, this is more or less it. Like, if there's extra footage, it's been lost.
And if there's something you would cut down, I think it would be this, I have to go work for a pornographer subplot.
But then where does he get the bomb?
Oh, good point. Good point. You need this just to introduce the Mad Bomber character, which is interesting because just to walk it through, he starts off by taking upskirt shots for a pornographer. And then the pornographer's like, it's time for you to poke. Again, I don't know how the translation is doing, but it's all about poking. Don't you want to poke? And he's like, no.
Yeah, this is what I actually think you keep it, because it reminds you that he's not a pervert, or at least not the way I would define it. Everything that he's been doing is about gaining respect and validation. As crazy as it sounds, as depraved as it has been, he's not wanting to just sleep with a bunch of women. In fact, he went back to work taking those photos. He had to pretend every panty he was snapping was his Maria's, you know, was Yoko's. Like, that was the only way he got through with it. He makes a very, I think, salient point at this point of he's saving himself. He's a good version of boy, that he's a one-woman kind of gal. And that, I think, helps. Again, as we've sunk more and more into the mire of depraved behaviors, he has remained pure in some weird way.
Yeah, there is this kind of irony. He has to go to some kind of pornography convention because he refuses to poke the girl. So this is his punishment, and dress up as a priest and take these confessions from all these perverts. And it's kind of funny, but one of them is like, straight up, I just want to blow stuff up. He's got bombs.
Which still is less disturbing than the I like kids guy.
Well, of course, yes. The one that likes to eat her hair. That was disturbing.
Eating women's vomit was my least favorite. And so he did all of this because they promised him, work hard, we'll let you see your girl. And they pull out this little mini TV. I forgot about these things, but like, it's got a little like antenna and all of that. Remember, like, ooh, you can take TV with you.
Yeah, my dad got one and we could never get any reception on it.
I had one in middle school to hide from my parents when I was told I can't watch TV.
And you ended up watching Static.
Yep.
UHF was better than nothing.
Debatable. But anyway, the point is that the footage that they present is her basically in confession. She has joined the Zero Church, and part of that work means that you swear off, I guess, your sins and that of others. She is basically, whether he is Miss Scorpion or himself, she wants none of it. And she pities him and wants nothing to do with anything but the church. She's basically become a zealot and is now defending them as they're receiving charges of people committing suicide and all the bad behavior associated with cults.
And this is where the movie basically abandons humor. When we start dealing with the cult stuff, it's now going to become a drama/horror film, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you're right. this pervert convention is the last time we're, I think, given permission to laugh. And at this point, we're really going to some dark, sometimes serious things. The fact that he goes to get help from the Catholic Church and they basically call him a pornographer and they won't help his sister. Yeah, that felt pretty indicting. There's something, too, that's also gets said. The reason why they won't help her is that she's now seen as an actor. And I thought that this was something weird with the translation. I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but there are people in the church that are actors.
My understanding was there's like three levels to this cult brainwashing, and you have the beginning level. Once you get to that actor level, that means you can't even be deprogrammed probably at that point. It was just how deep you were into this cult.
Okay.
I liked that the levels were defined based upon performance, though. Because you had the actor, and then above the actor is the prompter who gives the actor their line if they forget their line.
Yes, and Keoki Aya is a prompter, and really she's the puppeteer.
I felt like she was the cult leader.
Yeah, the Zero cult leader looks like her toy, really, in the end. She is obviously the one getting the money for the church, and she's the one doing this to get this family involved, and I don't know if it's getting them any new members or not, but she's certainly enjoying their downfall. And we can see her popping in on the mini TV laughing at you. And no matter how hard he tries to get to his Virgin Mary, it's going to be denied.
And I mentioned early on that there's a point where a couple of characters drop out. And this is where Tetsu and Kiori basically disappear. We see them very briefly in the cult. And Tetsu is confessing that it's not Kiori he loved, but the sex with Kiori he loved, and that was pulling him away from being a priest. And then they're just gone. And while I understand this is a love story between you and Yoko, the fact that his father, who has been a driving presence this whole film, just falls out of the movie until almost the last scene was really weird to me. Again, it made me think stuff was cut out.
I'll be a little stronger. It was a mistake. I feel like up to this point, Sean Sono is doing a pretty good job juggling a lot of crazy elements and a lot of different moods and themes. And at this point in the movie, I would say the last 45 minutes to the hour, I feel like he loses his grip on some of his ideas. The father is a large reason why Yu has done all the things that he's done. And the fact that they don't have a scene to come together and work through that, big mistake.
Yeah, he's eventually going to go back to those parents when they're totally in the cult, but they don't have a moment. It's not about that reunion. It's not about whether his father has accepted him. That's like those magic bullets floating in the air. It's kind of just dropped, that whole relationship.
Correct. Yeah, this movie could use an ending rewrite.
Or maybe it's in that hour and a half that no one's seen.
I'm going to argue rewrite because the scenes we do have here, I don't really enjoy. I don't like all of this about let's kidnap Yoko and try to deprogram her ourselves on a rusty school bus on the beach. Cut all of this.
If not cut it way down.
Yeah, it feels like this is there to get to this 7-minute monologue about Corinthians chapter 13, where that camera is just set on Yoko's face as the classical music plays. And I feel like it's supposed to be really powerful, but I don't know what it's supposed to mean. Like, there is emotion in her performance, but to what end?
Yeah, it's an amazing stunt. You're going to have an actress recite this biblical scripture to the letter in a very tight close-up, unbroken by editing. Good job on her, but why? And I did feel this way about Suicide Circle as well. As we near closer and closer to the center of the mystery, there's more and more fragmentation. Every question asked now becomes tenfold. You're further and further away from a truth the closer you're getting to this end.
And what Corinthians is, they read a lot of Corinthians, but what I've always taken the basis of it is the start is, it was different in the translation, but as I know it, it's when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became an adult, I put away childish things. What does that have to do with the themes of this movie?
Well, I mean, these are all people traumatized from their childhood. The father's rejection, the abuse of the other fathers. And so, again, I could try to draw correlations out in this whole thing about love, that if Aya's acting through hate, you gotta learn to act through love. There's ideas there, I just don't know if it ever really comes together.
And I would say that oftentimes, certainly priests are referred to as fathers, the Lord. I do think Christianity thinks in paternalistic terms, and that your relationship to your creator is one of father and son. So there are strong ways to connect the actual family drama with the spiritual concerns, but not unlike the character's inability to marry those two, the director is also not able to bring these themes home in a way, I feel like, in the end, that would really make it dramatically work, which is what I feel like he's really going for here at the end. He wants us to be moved, and I would think it's probably better to be laughing.
Yeah, I'm missing all that craziness that we've had in the first 2 hours.
I agree. The long period on the bus where Yu is also kind of going through his own penance, though. He refuses to eat while Yoko won't eat, and at one point he's tempted. You could view that like Jesus was tempted, and he put down the sandwich. He didn't take the bite. But yeah, this has all become what feels like a very different movie. And then I feel, though, at this point, I kind of know where the movie is going. And so when the Zero cult shows up, rescues Yoko, and tells Yoko to cut off Yu's dick, if the movie had had more of this tone for more of the movie, I might have been really afraid for Yu. But at this point, I kind of know where it's going, and they're not going to neuter Yu right here when I know there's still 30, 45 minutes left to go.
I didn't look at the counter, but that's how long there's left? Okay, yeah. Obviously, that's the longest, like, castration ever. But he could do it. He could drag that out 30 minutes, though. If anyone could do that, Sona would.
I do like this stuff, though, when Yu ends up joining the Zero Church and you see that cult process. I don't know, I find cults fascinating. Sono probably took this from his real life experience. So this stuff I found interesting. I don't know, this is like a whole movie in and of itself.
I agree, I'm with you, Jacob. Cults always fascinated me because when I was in college, I wanted to be in a cult.
Leader or follower?
Follower. And my thinking was, you think you're happy. You may be shoveling shit for some megalomaniacal false god, but if you think you're happy shoveling that shit, isn't that all happiness is? Is a thought that you have?
A delusion.
Yes, exactly. Happiness is delusion. And so I really wish we could have seen more of what these followers had that made them like the Zero cult, because Yu is in there and he's able to resist their programming 100% without any effort. So what is it that brought all these people in and made them programmed to have a devotion to the Zero cult?
Yeah, I agree. This is crucial. Honestly, you've been building up to this. Everything is about the Zero cult. And what does that mean? And there's cool visuals going on. There's this binary idea. Their whole symbol is like the crucifix inside, like
a zero.
Yeah, the zero, which really both has phallic and vaginal attributes to it. And it's binary. You know, it's the whole theme about having to make the choice between one or the other. Like, I feel like the answers to what have been plaguing this family should come out of their experience being in this cult. And instead, it comes off as very impressionistic, very much like skits about them going off and going to a farm out in the middle of nowhere to confess sins. And it's neither funny nor revealing.
Yeah, all the stuff about Plato's cave and...
Right.
Yeah, I wish... Look, maybe we need that 6-hour cut and we would have got all that and this would have felt more cohesive.
I guess they do program Yu well enough that he no longer is slave to his dick. He is able to control his dick and not get an erection when he sees Yoko's panties.
I took it as Yu was self-disciplined enough to train himself. Like, he never does get brainwashed. He's always able to maintain his identity and pretend in the cult because he has this goal to save Yoko and bomb the church.
You're right. I suppose where I say the programming is he never would have exercised that self-discipline were they not threatening to cut off his dick if he got another erection for that. But this is really all Aya playing Yu because she's trying to make Yu not get hard for Yoko, but yet also trying to seduce Yu on her own and not able to make him get hard for her.
No, I don't think she wants sexual activity with him. I always took it as, you're my father and I'm going to enjoy cutting your dick off. And I would just go ahead and ask, why didn't she do it? Right there in the bus, when it's confronted and they're handing Yoko the knife, and that would be the thing, right? Like, you're part of the cult now. Sometimes they make you get a haircut or wear Nike shoes or tunics or something. You got to lose your genitals. I feel like that should have happened.
Again, there's all these themes about the cross-dressing and Miss Scorpion. There's something there. There's a whole direction you could have gone exploring this transition.
Tighten it, and instead the instinct is to loosen it, to be uncertain, to kind of waffle and have hazy ideas that don't really answer anything. It's okay. I'm staying with the movie. If it sounds like I'm grumpy, it's only because this movie was so good, and now it's not as good. And I find myself wishing I could stay on the high of the first 3 hours.
And if my review were a gas tank, it was sitting at about 3/4 for 3 hours, and now it's slowly going down towards empty as it goes. And the question is, how much goodwill has it earned in 3 hours to coast through this last hour? But I'm very glad it's only 25% of the movie that's like this and not 75% of the movie, because I'm neither intrigued by what it's saying intellectually, nor am I entertained by how it's told, because this movie is done inexpensively. There's a lot of ambient sound in certain shots that makes it sound like it was using an on-camera microphone. There's just a lot of cutting that doesn't feel entirely professional, a couple of jump cuts in there. And so I'm really relying on the acting and the writing to carry this movie, and it's faltering.
I think we're all saying the same thing to some degree, that, yes, it's starting to peter out. It's not quite keeping up with that energy that it had. It's not keeping you as entranced as it was. But I will say, once we get this whole mission of you to dress up as Miss Scorpion and infiltrate this cult again, and he's got that bomb and his bag of weapons. Okay, I'm back into this. Like, as he's going and searching for this family, and he keeps cutting to them, like, all dressed in white, eating a meal as he's going through every door, like, it does pick up, like, this action does kind of get me excited again.
It feels like a really, like, low-res Fight Club. It's like, blow up the building, he's become a terrorist, and dealing with identity issues. Yes, it should just be said, this movie, of course it was low budget. Who the hell would fund this movie? It had to be done on this shitty video, DV, and I'm more impressed with what they were able to do with this than knock it for its technical problems, because you got to think that they had almost no money to make this movie.
The funny thing for me is I was just taken out of the movie when Yu is going room to room, and I don't remember what the translation of what he was shouting was, but if you guys have seen, it's become somewhat of a meme and a video clip lately from Friends when they're trying to move the sofa up the flight of stairs and Ross is just yelling, "Pivot! Pivot!"
I remember the episode.
It sounds to me like every time Yu goes into a room, he's yelling, "Pivot!"
I think he's yelling for Yoko. Again, we're to believe that all of this is about Yoko. And I'm like, there was an issue with pleasing his dad, too, that has been totally dropped. And his dad is right there eating hot pot with Yoko and the stepmom, or I guess they never got married, but you know what I mean. The happy family is sitting right there, ready to go through that cathartic reunion, and it kind of just, I don't know what happens in these moments. Let's break it down.
I feel like Keoki Aya wants this to happen. We've seen that Yu has killed the cult leader, at least the figurehead. And during this moment, she's the one calling off the security. She's stabbing herself, telling Yu to fall apart into a million pieces. And that feels like what Keoki was always about, is things falling apart. If God is about resurrection and bringing it back to life, she wanted the opposite of that. And so it seems like even for her cult, she wanted it to fall apart.
She also says we're the same, which I think means that you're going to die and I'm going to die in this moment. What I did to destroy you is also self-inflicted. Harikiri.
Yeah. See, you say, well, let's walk through what happens here, but I don't know what happens here. You say that Tetsu didn't get married. Maybe he did. That's the thing. They're sitting there having dinner as a family with Yoko and Tetsu and Kiori. I mean, are they still acting as a family unit? It seems that way. I mean, at a later time, we're going to see Tetsu and Kiori profess their love for each other, but did they get married? Are they still a couple? What's going on here? The whole thing with him and Yoko had become, like you said, the Brady Bunch, where the parents were as much of a part of the story as his relationship with Yoko, that he is so tunnel vision for Yoko right now. Admittedly, he didn't have the best relationship with his father, but he was always seeking the approval. When he comes bashing into that room in drag with a sword and starts slicing these people apart, and again, more huge fountains of blood from a single sword slash, that was just, I found it very entertaining to watch, but it just didn't feel like a climax where all the characters were coming together and all the threads were getting tied up.
Definitely not cohesion. I would say his thought was that Miss Scorpion was going to wake Yoko from whatever programming had happened, that her love for that was more intense than anything the church might have done to her. And again, we don't really know what the church did to her. That's a mistake of this movie. But rather than snap out of her delusion, he falls into the delusion that he is Miss Scorpion, which is kind of inexplicable. Okay, I guess.
Well, yeah, after this whole scene in the cult, we're given a bunch of voiceover, like, the police investigated the cult because of the bombing, and the dad and the stepmom joined a victim support group. It's just all voiceover. It doesn't come about naturally. Again, maybe that's just, like, furiously trying to cut this movie down to get it to something that's reasonable to put in theaters.
By the same token, the first hour of this movie or more was voiceover as well, so it didn't come to me as out of the blue, like, God help me for bringing up this movie as an example, but Blast from the Past is a movie that feels like the ending is really tacked on because all of a sudden you have an Alicia Silverstone voiceover where you haven't had voiceover the whole time, and it feels like they were just making up an ending on the fly and just having her record stuff to duct tape that movie together. Here, yeah, because they started that way, ending that way felt okay-ish.
Remember those Mentos ads? Like, there's always, like, this kind of cheesy turn-to-the-camera grinning that happens. Like, I feel like this is a 30-minute version of that. I guess I wanted to see them get together. I don't know that I really did, because, again, I will walk back all the way to the first scene and say it was really unfortunate what Yu's mom did to him, making him fall in love with a religious icon and an ideal that can't be lived up to in reality. Him loving Yoko, maybe it's good he snaps out of that. I don't know if he should be a ninja drag performer, but I don't know that I wanted him to get together with her. I really can honestly say that.
Yeah, is the point of this ending that religion just screws you up forever? There doesn't matter if you go to victim support group, you're screwed up forever. Like, it's weird that we're told Yoko's a lesbian, but now she's got this love for you, and that's controversial. Maybe she wasn't. Maybe these people, just none of them know who they are. I thought it was going to go for a more daring ending. Again, what's Love and Exposure about? A dude that's Catholic and takes upskirt photos and falls in love with one of the girls he photos. Like, to go for this really weird traditional ending, I wasn't expecting it, and I don't think it works.
The one thing I love, and I do really like it, is that what has an impact on him, I don't know that it should be the thing to snap him out of the delusion, but the fact that he ends up looking up at his own skirt and that he's seeing both his erection and the panties feels like an idea came together, but also needed some more elaboration. I love the fact that she comes for him with a knife in her bosom, not sure what she's going to do. Is she back to her man-hating self? Is she going to fall in love with Miss Scorpion? Still not clear to me watching the scene, but I do like the fact that she leaves behind a broken mirror compact that has him look up at himself. It could have ended there, honestly. I could have been fine with that as the ending.
A weird moment of self-reflection for this film, seeing your own panties.
Literal self-reflection.
Yeah, the running to each other. Maybe that's a convention in Japanese romance cinema. I guess I don't watch enough of that, but is it a parody of it? Is it a Mentos ad? I know I don't like it.
Yeah, it is really cheesy how he's now running after her and nobody can catch him, and it's like every single hospital employee is chasing after him, every orderly, every security guard, and he's able just to bust right out of that. And then I have to laugh because he gets to the car and Yoko had to grab the driver in order to make the car stop. He never tries the handle. He just immediately goes to bashing the window in with his elbow. I'm like, maybe you could have just opened the door. I never saw him try.
I think the reason why you don't try is she's being arrested. That's a cop hauling her away to jail for bringing a knife to a psych ward. She kills him and gets to get the car to stop. I don't know. The Graduate, this is not. Like, this ending, this romance, whatever this is, you got a lot of interesting ideas in this 4 hours, but the best ones are not coming here at the end.
Well, let's hope our best ideas come here at the end. Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Love Exposure? Jacob.
I thought it was interesting that they had this alter ego of Miss Scorpion, because I have seen those female prisoner Scorpion films. Like I said, they are hard E exploitation films. Rape, violent misandry, forced abortions, incest between a sister and her mentally challenged brother. Like, they are crazy and lewd and challenge the norms and morals of society, much, I think, like this film might. And yet, every once in a while, there's these really artistic scenes. You're like, oh, this isn't just like a dirty film to shock. This director has higher aspirations and wants to bring art into it. And that's how this one is. Like, you tell someone about this film and it just sounds like a crazy, why would you ever want to watch this? But it has higher aspirations than just the shock. Though I think the shock is part of it. And I think that is one of the interesting things about this film, what it is saying about religion and those guilt complexes. And look, I'm not a fan of religion, but my favorite author is Flannery O'Connor, who's a hardcore Catholic. All of her stuff is about, you got to come to Jesus, but when you come to him, it's a violent act. It's getting gorged by a bull. It's being shot by a gangster. That is how you are saved. And so maybe there's something just baked into me where I find this kind of exploration interesting. I remember talking to my dad when I was a teenager about religion. I'm like, well, don't we kind of have to sin? Or why did Jesus die? We didn't want him to die in vain. He died for our sins, so we have to sin. Or else he died for nothing.
What brilliant doublespeak.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things in this film, a lot of themes. It goes all over the place, but there's really interesting outsider ideas in this about religion, about society, about what perversion is. And it's hard to sum up. We've talked about it for, at this point, less than half the running time of this film.
Good job, guys. We've been succinct.
But, like, this film gets into a lot, and it's not perfect. We all talked about, as we get to the ending, it feels like Sono maybe didn't know how to sum up all these ideas, or maybe they're lost on the cutting room floor. We may never know. But despite its imperfections, just like those female prisoner Scorpion films, they're dirty, quality, badly shot films. But every once in a while, they have these really artistic flares to them. And you're like, oh, this is interesting. This is really interesting all of a sudden. And that's how I felt like going through this 4 hours. I'm like, okay, this is bizarre and weird and challenging. And now I'm getting kind of bored. Oh, now they've done this really interesting thing. Like, it's a 4 hour film. I don't know how you sustain the craziness of the first 2 hours, 4 or 4 hours. So I can't hold it against it too much. I think there's a lot of great ideas that are explored in this about guilt and religion and all that, that I would give this a strong recommend for.
Stuart.
Yeah, you know, this movie, the best way I can put it is if you put Martin Scorsese and the ghost girl from The Ring in Fight Club, this is what the battle looks like. Maximum carnage, maximum Catholic guilt, complete sensory overload. This is obviously a dare. This movie is about pushing and provoking, and I think can be enjoyed just for that. If you take nothing else out of it other than its outrageousness, I do think that it's 4 hours of really crazy, bizarre behavior that will keep you guessing to the end. And so for that reason alone, creativity, all of that, yes, worth seeing. But I want to second what I heard Jacob say, which is that this movie could have rested on gore and splatter and cartoonish slapstick and gender flipping and all of that. But somewhere deep in there is a genuine, serious concern, as any art house movie I've ever seen, about the nature of religion and what it does to people, and how spiritual love is impossible to marry with carnal love and romanticism. Those ideas are serious. Sono means it. And that's what makes this movie cool, is it's very easy on some level to break things and to provoke and shock and be the bad boy. But it's another thing to really put your heart in some faith and try to find answers. And for 3/4 of this movie, I saw a director really juggling a lot and for the most part pulling it off. But, you know, I do wish it could be remade. I mean, honestly, I like this movie. I recommend this movie. But my one holdout is that technically there's a lot of imperfections. And then when we get to this end here, it could really use some trimming up. I bet you Sono could make a better movie of it now. Give him the money they gave him for the Ghostland.
Prisoners of the Ghostland, yeah.
Yeah, Prisoner of the Ghostland, that Nick Cage shit, and have him do this again, tighter movie, maybe only make it 3 hours, get there, and yeah, I think you'd have a masterpiece. I mean, I think he's that close to brilliance, which is why I'm sad to say it's only a solid recommend. It's only really good and not perfection.
And 3 for 3 on giving it a recommend. Mine is just run-of-the-mill recommend. It was something I didn't know what I was in for, and as I said earlier, the first couple hours of this, I really enjoyed a lot, but that's when he's relying more on humor and slapstick to a degree. And any movie that's going to have ninja action to be used for upskirt photos is a movie that's got to get a recommend in my book, no matter what other sins it may commit. But its biggest sin is one of taking itself too seriously at the end. And it could have delivered a message. You know, we mentioned The Sound of Music. Let me go Mary Poppins. A spoonful of sugar could make the Catholic medicine go down easier. And instead, he decides to go bitter for the last hour of the film. And I found myself, you said you didn't know how much of the film was left, Stuart. I knew. I was checking that timer pretty regularly for the last 90 minutes. I was checking it occasionally early on just because I was having a good time, but had no idea of how much time had passed, and I knew I was in for a marathon. But by the end, I was checking the timer being like, okay, we're getting to the climax. Okay, the bomb went off. Okay. And I didn't expect the elongated ending at the mental hospital that didn't make a whole lot of sense. But overall, I'm happy to have been introduced to the work of Sono. I did watch some of Suicide Circle with Marjorie. I didn't watch it beginning to end. I enjoyed what I saw of that, though. I'd be more than open to exploring more of his work. The one I would hop to is, of course, the one with Nicolas Cage, because if it's got Nicolas Cage in it, I'm 99% more likely to watch it than if it doesn't have Nicolas Cage in it. But you guys are saying no, so I think I'll skip that one.
I didn't understand anything going on in that film.
I really didn't like it, and I like both of them in the right vehicle.
But with that, I just do want to give another shout out to Chris Bravo for picking this movie. 3 recommends. Not every donor pick has been so lucky.
I wouldn't have predicted that. I mean, who can predict how people are going to respond to this? But I'm glad to hear it, because I think it has something for everyone, and it probably also has something that you will really hate too.
To offend everyone.
Yeah. And so I'm glad that we were able to see the green in all of it. And boy, what a great setup. If ever there was a movie to get me ready for more upskirting, we got Basic Instinct on Tuesday. Not to mention, followed by that next Friday, you like bad boy prep school kids, Harry Potter. We're going to start that series.
Is that how you would describe him? A bad boy?
Yeah, this is totally like a brilliant segue into Hogwarts, right? Doesn't he do crap like this?
I don't know. They do hang out with Moaning Myrtle in the bathroom.
Exactly. That's what I mentioned. I'm a newbie to that whole series, so I'm expecting some wicked, wicked things. I've heard it's satanic, so yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's not zapped. They're not using their wands to make people's shirts fly off and skirts go up.
No, I'm shocked. But March patrons, if you hang in with us, wait till Oscar Sunday. We're going to cover 2019's Best Picture winner.
Best Picture twice over for Best Picture and Best Foreign Picture.
No, that's true. Good point. Parasite. You know, the Oscars a lot of times get it wrong, but that really was my favorite film of that year, and I'm excited to talk about it.
They got it right that year.
Yeah, I can't say I would have watched it if we hadn't been doing our live Oscar show that year, but I loved that movie, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I think I'll get a lot more out of it on a second viewing.
So that'll be a special Oscar Sunday. I believe it's at the end of March. We got Harry Potter every Friday in between now and then.
So thank you to all of the Now Playing supporters who are listening for these monthly shows. Hope you've enjoyed the double dose in a row there of 2 not so different films, I suppose. Both of which involved cross-dressing the past 2 weeks.
They both had their outrageousness, this one more so.
And Thanks again, Chris, for picking this movie. And until next time, hail to the perfects.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast. And a special thanks to Chris Bravo for his incredible support of our show and for picking Love Exposure for our hosts to review. Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho. Associate produced by Jason Latham. Now Playing is edited by Santiago and Arnie. Now Playing credits read by Brock. The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated. Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
A senior...
And it the other way around? Koiki Aya?
I went with the Wikipedia.
Yeah, they call her Koiki, so I'm guessing it would actually be Aya Koiki, because they do last name first name last.
I noticed that they called her Koiki, which leads me to believe that Aya would be the surname.
IMDb has Koiki Aya.
And Wiki has Aya Koiki.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I noticed that IMDb tends to flip it.
I'll just go with what I wrote.
Yeah.
Apparently doesn't believe in dating again because he's going straight to the Catholic Church and becoming a priest.
Yeah,
and then Marla from Fight Club.
Yeah, it influences them both in a dramatic way.
Go.
It influences them.